Hey, everybody. Glad to have you back with us for another episode of the Curtain Call Podcast, a production of the Yes Network. He is John J. Filippelli. I'm Justin Shackle. Our wonderful producer, Dan Bassone, with us as well. He's really doing all the hard work here. But Flip, we know that you and I, and Dan, obviously, we've been trying to do an episode for a few days here. And sometimes the delays, they become a blessing because we need to touch on the lack of accountability by big league umpires here. And the latest example of that came on Monday at Yankee Stadium, where Aaron Boone was literally ejected by Hunter Wendelstedt for something that a fan yelled to him. There's clear video, clear audio evidence of that happening, thanks to the Yes Network. And when Boone told Wendelstedt that it was a fan who said something and that it did not come from the Yankee dugout, Wendelstedt responded by saying, "I don't care." Well, he should care, and so should Major League Baseball. What did you make of this entire incident on Monday?
Without trying to indict Harry Hunter, my father was Harry Wendelstedt. Hunter Wendelstedt, who's been an umpire for a long time, and on the
and a good one,
very good one. Yeah, to be honest with you, a good one. That's where I was going to go. He's a pretty good umpire. He had a bad moment. That's a bad moment. It just is. I mean, and it's unfortunate that that's the response, because that's not a good response. I don't care. That's a terrible response. I mean, if he said, "Look, that's the way I heard it. I mean, that's the way I interpreted it. That's the way I think I saw it. That's the way I'm going to go with it. I'm sorry. I don't, with all due respect to you, I'm not really buying into you, what you have to say, Aaron Boone, and this is my ruling, is what I'm going to do." Even though it would have been incredibly wrong, you respect that, because you say, well, okay, things happen, whatever, people misunderstand. But this was so egregious, it's ridiculous. I mean, that was like, I mean, and we did have all the evidence on Yes, it's for sure we did. But putting it aside for a second, such an overreaction to something at the beginning of the game, and he was afraid that he would lose control of the game because you know, there would be a hit batter at that time, right? And so that was his fear, that if he didn't sort of lay down the law, that the game would get out of control. I mean, really, the Oakland A's on a Monday afternoon at Yankee Stadium, first time in with a lot of players who are very new to the major leagues. There's not a lot of grudges going on here. I think scores that have to get settled, or you know, even getting hit with the pitch, it wasn't exactly like it was like a high up and in, you know, pitch that was going to cause that Rodon was headhunting or anything. It wasn't. It was just pitching got away. It wasn't a big deal. Honestly, I didn't consider it anything. But if he hit him, that's unfortunate. It wasn't terrible. Didn't kill him. Didn't hurt him. There was no velocity. There wasn't a huge velocity to the pitch.
Yeah.
So I didn't understand that. None of it made any sense to me. Okay. And it was, and I'm sorry for Hunter Wendelstedt, but he made a big mistake and he's wrong. That's all there is to it. And he owes Boone an apology.
I agree with that. I think an apology is much deserved. Hopefully we get it tonight. We're recording this on Tuesday morning, but he also doubled down after the game, speaking to a pool reporter. And there's been no public accountability for umpires for years. We all know this, but the smug fashion in which Hunter Wendelstedt delivered his explanation, he said, quote, "This isn't my first ejection. You know, in the entirety of my career, I've never ejected a player or a manager for something a fan has said." Well, that's what happened. And all you had to do was go look at the video that was all around the internet. You would think maybe the call from the league would be waiting in the umpire's locker room or clubhouse or whatever, and it'd be there for the entire crew. Something. Like you said, all it takes is for one person to say, "Hey, I made a mistake," when you had a bad moment. And that's just, it seems like we're so far away from that time and time again.
There's a video room right next to when you go down the stairs of the Yankee dugout. There's a video room where, and there's one, I'm sure, in the visitors' dugout as well, mm-hmm. where you can go down and check your at-bats. If you're a hitter, you go down and check your at-bats between, or you want to go look at some video, whatever, you have you go in there and look at, they have recordings of what's going on in the game. It's well known. There's nothing nefarious about it. It's part of the game. And it's done as a teaching method and a review method for, you know, hitters to go see what they did, or even pitchers to see how they threw it, where the location was, et cetera, et cetera. It's not a big deal. And he knows it exists. He has to know it exists. So it'd be very easy for him to go down and check between innings. He would say, "Listen, I next the next half inning, do me a favor. I'm going to come back. I want to look at that real quickly. Could you just cue that up?" And I'm sure they have that for him. And but to him, it wasn't. No, it was just he was doubling down and tripling down and quadrupling down. And it was unfortunate because it was a bad incident. It was unnecessary. It was too. I'm sorry. It was out of control. It was totally out of control. And poor Aaron Boone, had to suffer the arrow, the swings and arrows of those consequences there. It was terrible.
Yeah, it was reckless. And if Hunter didn't hear the fan yesterday, he's definitely going to hear him the next 3 days over at Yankee Stadium.
Oh,
So,
for sure.
yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about this Yankee team, Flip, because we're nearly 25 games into the season. That's 15% of the season. My ace math skills right there. The Yankees are 15-8 at the time we're recording this. But I have a feeling that you've seen enough certain areas of their play that concerns you now. And maybe in the long term. So the floor is yours here. Start us off with what you're seeing.
I mean, there's so many layers to this, to be honest with you. And I also, I'm a believer, and I always have been, that you got to watch about 50 games, first of all, because that's a better sample size, and you'll be able to come up with a stronger and more cogent observations when you've seen more games. And and I've seen so many seasons. We all have, where a team starts off really, really well in April. And by the end of June, they're nowhere. Or you've seen a hitter get off to an incredible start, and then all of a sudden by June he's toast, right? You see it all the time, and so you don't want to make rushes. You don't want to rush to judgment. You just don't. But having said that, looking for some observations after the first, handful of games, I would say this: Yankees have work to do. They're in a very tough division. The American League East is very, very balanced. You see Tampa Bay, you see Toronto, you look at them and you say, they're pretty good baseball teams. They're not great baseball teams, but they're good baseball teams, and they're capable of chaos and giving you a hard time. They're solid baseball teams. They're not great, but they're solid. Okay, the Orioles are a lot more than solid, and they have gotten off to a little bit of a slow start considering what their schedule was. Their schedule was pretty light, so their record should be a little bit better, I think, than it is, although it's not terrible. And they've got way too much. They've got so much talent and young talent too. I know Holliday's really struggling. They brought him up. I know he's struggling, but having said that, they have a lot of talent, and that's who I'd be looking at if I'm the Yankees. You look at the Orioles. Okay, so you got the Orioles, and you have Red Sox too. The Red Sox, that's the surprise to me. The Red Sox playing really, really well, and pitching has really been well, and you're really good. And you say to yourself, where'd that come from? Because I didn't see that. So anyway, that's for another day. What I'm saying is, so you've got a very strong division. That's number one. So the Yankees really, especially when you play teams in your division, Yankees have to be on their game. They just have to be. Okay, that's first observation. Second observation. Pitching. I said coming out of spring training, I didn't love the bullpen. Okay. I still don't love the bullpen. And some nights it gets it done, and there are some days when it doesn't get it done. And it certainly there's very few days, I would say this, that it gets it done without giving you a scare. And I mean, even though like the result is what you matter, the end result is what matters, and that's true, but they give you a scare. So the bullpen is a scare. The starters have been—they haven't really given you length, but they're pitching better. Nestor's pitching better. I mean, starting to see—Schmidt hasn't been terrible. Rodon gave a really great outing yesterday, so you have to hang. I know it's the Oakland A's, but you still have to—you be really encouraged by what you saw there.
That's
That's
who's in front of the Yankees, right? Like he's,
right.
yeah.
That's right. You can't make. You have to play those teams. You have to decide what you have to win, and that's the risk to it. So he really pitched solidly. So the starting rotation is pitching a little bit better now, which makes me feel a little bit better because to me it's always about pitching, and then you look at the offense and you say, okay, they really were hammering the ball at points of the season. They scored a lot of runs at certain games, and some guys got off to great starts, and there's other guys have not come around at all. And the guys who got Volpe's been incredible. Slumping a little bit now. Cabrera's been unbelievable. I never expected Cabrera, never expected him to play like this. Never. I just didn't. And I think he's been terrific. He's been unbelievably great. Soto is, as advertised, maybe better if that's possible. He's been that good. Judge is slumped. Rizzo is not, Mayhew's not back in the lineup yet. You start looking at Stanton has been a surprise. Okay. And to me, he has been. I mean, a lot of talk about a lot of different things, but he's played, got some big hits for them. He's playing okay. But so the offense is not as advertised yet. It isn't because there's holes in it. Torres has also not played well. So I look at them. I have areas of concern about their offense. I have areas of concern about their bullpen. Starting pitching, I'm starting to feel a little bit better. So, defensively, the days they make some really, they play good defense, or the days they don't play great defense, they're inconsistent right now. They have to find their way. And they haven't been awful. They're not terrible. I mean, look at what they're standing, so they're okay.
Yeah, they're 7 games above 500, right?
Right.
Like
Not
third
terrible.
week of
That,
the season.
and the schedule has not been great. I mean, these are tough
Right.
teams, some of these teams. So I think that they should be happy where they are. And but at the end of the day, I see red flags, I see caution flags, and I think they're going to have to address certain needs on that team for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the surface level answer, the quick answer is I need to see more. Like you said, at least 50 games. And that covers a lot of areas. It covers hitting. I don't think the lineup not hitting can last. It's April, it's cold.
Gotcha.
That's one two of many factors here. They're too talented to not hit. So I'd use caution when trying to evaluate the team's offense in the third week of April. Same thing with infield defense. So like maybe a small sample thing. Tough to gauge as well, but I'm kind of with you in one area, and that is the bullpen. And I'm cool with Clay Holmes. I'm going to be on Clay Holmes Island this entire time. Fierce defender of Clay Holmes, but I think the bullpen in totality here, I am slightly concerned with the lack of strikeout power in the bullpen because I don't think you need a large sample size to notice that, right? Pitchers are pitchers. They throw their certain pitches, and that's what you have. That's what you're going to get over the long haul. So just go back to yesterday's game, Monday's game against Oakland. Prime example, Victor Gonzalez, talented pitcher, talented left-handed option. He is on in the top of the ninth. He's ahead 0-2 against Zach Gelof, and he just cannot put Gelof away. And Gelof eventually worked the count, got back into the sequence here, and then he hits a two-run homer that won the game. That's one small example of this bullpen and the pitching staff as a whole, really getting to two strikes on a hitter and not being able to put them away. I would be more observant of that, keep an eye on those trends, but with the bullpen, it doesn't seem like there is that arm in there at the moment that has the ability to go after a hitter, attack, and get a strikeout. So.
Going back to what the area of concerns, you're right. I'm totally on board with the bullpen. I think they're going to have a lot of work to do there. And that has been a real strength of the Yankees the last couple of years. It's really been the bullpen. I don't think it's a strength right now. I think it's an area they need to address. And also the fact that, we really glossed over this was Judge. Judge has not ha found his way yet. And that to me is starting to become an area of a little bit of concern. Just a little bit, to be honest with you. And I, because he's Judge. Judge is a great player. Judge is not the swings and misses you're seeing now, the at bats you're seeing. This is not Aaron Judge. This is not the Aaron Judge that Yankee fans are used to, any of us are used to seeing. And he's struggling mightily at the moment. Now, I mean, people struggle, people hit slumps. I get it. That's part of the game. But this doesn't seem right to me. And I have some concern about him right now, as a player. I do. And if you said to me the Judge would struggle the way he has, and that Gerrit Cole wouldn't be able to start the season, and the Yankees are where they are without Cole, without Judge, are you kidding?
Yeah, you're right.
That's one thing to be really say. Okay, we
Yeah.
could maybe we could be a little bit better, but the reality is, man, look at where we are. It's in spite of what happened to us. That's really what you that's your takeaway.
That probably speaks more to the early brilliance of Juan Soto. Just accentuates what he's been able to mean to this offense here in the early going. All right, John, a big story developed over the last week to 10 days or so. Last week, it was made official, and the Yankees and WFAN Radio announced that John Sterling was retiring, and it was effective immediately. And this is a man who'd been working for 64 years, the last 36 as the Yankees radio voice. He was an Iron Man in many ways. He broadcasted over 5,000 consecutive Yankee games that began in 1989. I know you've known John for years, and I kind of just wanted to walk down memory lane with you and your relationship with John and when you first met him. What were your first impressions and what his legacy is? So let's start from the beginning here. When did you first meet John?
Somewhere in the 1970s is where we first, I don't recall exactly when we first met, but I'm sure it was on the Game of the Week when I was working at NBC on the Game of the Week. And John was probably working for the Atlanta Braves, or I would think that that's where he was. And so that's probably where we first met. Could have been a little later on, but it was somewhere in there. And I've always had a nice relationship with John. I've known him for a very long time, as we've just alluded to. He's a professional. He works hard. He cares about his job. He loved being especially the Yankee part of it. He loved the Yankee play-by-play job on radio. He was excellent at it. There are people that don't love the nicknames, and there are people who will say whatever they're going to say. And it's local baseball, Susan. Okay, it's local baseball. And at the end of the day, the fan base really, really embraced John. And you can't quibble about his work ethic. You can't quibble about how prepared he was for games. Did he make mistakes? He made mistakes. Certain days were better, especially the last couple of years, were better than others. But at the end of the day, the aggregate body of work, John Sterling will go down as one of the best. And there were times that, whatever, but with the nicknames or this or that and whatever. But honestly, if you look at, again, going back to the aggregate body of work, he'll go down as a great broadcaster, and he deserves that. He really does. And he will be missed. I know, Justin, you're one of the people picking up the mantle and running with the ball here and doing a great job. You really are. But at the end of the day, it's like it's tough. That's it's not about your legacy right now, or my legacy, or anybody's legacy. This is about John Sterling. And John Sterling will go down as an all-time great, because he deserved that because of the longevity in the job and the overall excellence. If you look at the body of work that he brought to the job, I have a lot of respect for John. And he'll be missed because he's John Sterling.
Yeah, I'll say this. What are we here for, right? Like, what do we watch the games for? Why do we listen? To be entertained. John was a top shelf entertainer, okay? And I had the privilege of filling in for Susan a few times last year and sitting next to the man call the games. And it's just osmosis for him. When the game is being played and you come back from commercial, he zaps right back in and is locked in and brings it. And the game still excites him in his mid-80s. And I don't think the passion for the game has ever waned. It's just, he said it himself on Saturday, just doesn't have the strength or the stamina to go. I mean, he's going to be 86. It's natural, but he loves the game still. I totally believe him when he says he's, ready to just stay home and watch all the games, watch the postseason games in the NBA, the NHL. He loves sports. He loved baseball specifically. And locking it in even further, loved the New York Yankees. It was the only job that he ever wanted. And I'd be remiss if I just didn't mention that the thing that'll always stick with me, just getting to know John and now like working with him the last couple of years, is he's one of the kindest souls that you're ever going to come across. I never saw him have a bad day. And that was something that I made sure I needed to say to him and thank him for. And his response was, well, it doesn't cost anything to be kind. And it's so true. And I know it's kind of a throwaway line that people might think is just a line in passing, but if you stop and think about it and take it in and sort of apply it to your life, I think we'd all be much happier. But it's true. He was super kind. And that's what's going to stick out to me the most, just growing up listening to him and then having the pleasure of knowing him and actually working alongside him. It's just all surreal.
I got to know him too on the Yankeeography series, which we had yet. And I made him the host, and I did it solely on, not solely, I mean, the quality of his voice is incredible. I mean, listen to him as a broadcaster, his voice, the timbre, I mean, it's incredible. His voice is one of the great voices in the history of the game. And to your point, yes, he's one of the kindest gentlemen you'd ever meet. So he's good to everybody he meets, and he has the respect of most everybody he met has met. And people just, they respect the body of work, they respect the person that he was and is. And when we asked him if he would do an inning on Yes before he went back to do say goodbye on radio, and he said that he would come in, and he did. He did but he didn't really want to do any play by play. He told Mike, okay, I can't do any play by play. He just had it. He realized enough was enough, and when he was gone, going to be gone, he was going to be gone. And there's something about that that I really totally respect about. I'm not going to drag it out. When I'm going to do farewell tours, I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to just say goodbye, and that's it. It's like my last. That was my last at bat. That's it. We're done. And something really noble about that to me.
I'm with you. He joined the radio booth, and he was we thought, okay, he'd be in there for maybe a full inning, one last time with him and Susan, and he was in there for less than 3 minutes. He got out and he left, but he started the inning with Susan, and I think he called like the first two pitches of an Anthony Volpe at bat, and he goes, I'm not doing play by play. This is ridiculous. And but he just knew he got it. He had the presence of mind, and like you said, it's something noble about him just, having his own awareness. Like, all right, it's enough. I'm good, and yeah, there's just part of him that makes him so endearing to know him and just be around him in the work circle. So, absolutely gonna miss seeing John every day, but we're really happy for him that he's going to be able to just do what he wants on his clock, whether it's spending time with his children and just enjoying his life. One thing that
On his terms.
you talk about John is how he went to games, started into the 40s, obviously lived through the golden age with the 50s, the early 60s. And John, this is something that I want to touch on whenever we come across it during the season, because I think it's really important. And the Yankees do a good job at looking back at their history during the season. They have this date in Yankee history. Something that really jumped out to me yesterday was that on the date in 1959, April 22nd, it was when Whitey Ford pitched 14 shutout innings against the Washington Senators over at Griffith Stadium, and he struck out 15. So not only does he, pitch 14 innings, he strikes out over a batter an inning. And this is Whitey Ford. He's one of the best left-handers in the history of the game, certainly right up there with Andy Pettitte in the history of the New York Yankees. But I think we should spend just a couple of moments whenever these milestones they pop up, because if you don't talk about them, they're going to get lost in time. So I know, you grew up in the Mantle era. Whitey Ford was probably in the second to back half of his career when you really started to get into baseball. Just what were your memories of Whitey Ford on the mound as a player?
Actually, I remember him actually being pretty good because in 1961 he was like 25 and 4, we had a little help at the end, but from Louis Arroyo, who was really terrific out of the bullpen. But putting it aside for a second, Ford was a dominant pitcher and one of the great pitchers of truthfully of all time, great left-handers of all time. And if Casey Stengel had seen, for whatever reason, he didn't, he and Casey didn't get along. If he had started him in game one of the 1960 World Series and put him in that part of the rotation as opposed to slotting him third, the Yankees would have won that World Series. There's no question they would have won that World Series. And so, I mean, he was that great a pitcher. He was dominant. He had great stuff. He had great mound presence. And he was elite in the sense that he also got along with Mickey and the star. The Yankees were loaded with stars, and when you could cut through that and be and you got so many stars, and yet you could cut through it to be considered, one of the elite players, and not only on the team but in baseball, on a team like that, you've accomplished something, and he accomplished it. What everything he did, he did in multiples, and he did it really well. And he did it for a really long time.
He was a Manhattan kid too. Grew up in New
Lexington.
York City,
Yeah,
played
also.
ball in Astoria. But the best winning percentage by a pitcher in the 20th century, Whitey Ford, and he had a really interesting slick personality. That was kind of his second nickname, Slick. And it's a good book, his biography that he wrote. If you're a fan and you want to learn more about Whitey Ford, check out his biography, Slick, a really good book. So let's not forget these legends. I mean, they have their names and their numbers retired and they're out in Monument Park, but it's important to talk about them as well. All right. Anything else to land the plane with, John, before we wrap it up?
No, I'm just at the, again, the Yankees are in an interesting spot. I mean, the race is starting to unfold. We still need to see more games, so we have a larger sample size, so we can identify truly where their strengths are and where their weaknesses may be and what they're going to have to address. But if you said this would be their start, given the schedule that they had, And I would have said to you, I'll sign up for that. So, especially with Judge being limited and Cole being not there, I'm actually thrilled to see them where they are. So, putting all my objectivity aside for a second and saying I'm thrilled. Okay, we'll put that aside for a second and then say that I'm thrilled. It's been a good start for them, and they've got to, and again, there's some of the areas we always look for. You gotta get we to win. You gotta get help from unexpected places. Cabrera to me was an unexpected place. That's just one. I mean, there's other parts of this team. Got players playing, that I didn't see them play. I mean, who knew how certain players were going to perform? And some of these players are really last set. Stanton has also done, I think, a pretty decent job. There was a lot of questions about him. There still are questions, but the reality is, I think at least people have to exhale a little bit more when it comes to Stanton than they had. So, he's showing up, he's trying. He's not about effort, he's always giving you effort. But now he's starting to get some results again. So I think they have to feel better about that. And it's like, there's a lot of players that have yet to be heard from. Doesn't mean that they won't be heard from. So, again, the Yankees are getting some help from places that I didn't really think they would get it from. Volpe really developed very quickly. A little slumping a little bit right now, but the reality is he's come along very nicely. And so the Yankees have to feel good about that. Other areas they've got some question marks. So they'll work on the question marks. Brian Cashman will look at the team. He knows what he's seeing, and they will. I'm sure they'll make moves. They have. And plus, remember, you've got a lot of players coming back who haven't been heard from yet. And one of them is the Martian, who's going to be an impactful player on the Yankees. I know he's going to be. You'll see him in a while. But Cole hopefully comes back and you'll see him. And he's going to make, obviously, a difference. LeMahieu, hopefully he comes back and he can make a difference too. And players who have not been heard from yet, Torres and Anthony Rizzo, and hopefully they come back a little bit, and all of a sudden the Yankees, those question marks become exclamation points. The Yankees will be in really good shape.
Yeah, and all could happen because, again, very, very small sample size, roughly 25 games. You want to see at least double to start forming some serious opinions about the makeup of this club here in 2024. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Curtain Call podcast. A reminder, the Yankees are on, yes, virtually all week, save for Wednesday, I believe, or on Amazon Prime. So some night starts, Yankees pregame on YES, and postgame coverage on YES, following every single Yankees broadcast. For our terrific producer, Dan Bassone, for John J. Filippelli, I'm Justin Shackle. We'll talk to you next time on the Curtain Call podcast, a production of the YES Network. Take care.
Bye-bye.